Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, and also author of Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensics Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. Today on The Wildlife, I'll talk about the impact of lead on wildlife and waterfowl in Argentina with wildlife veterinarian Marcela Uhart. Dr. Marcela Uhart has been a veterinarian with the Wildlife Conservation Society's Field Veterinary Program since 1996. She was born and raised on a ranch in the Argentine Pampas, and from an early age was determined to become a vet to better protect the creatures living next to and often in conflict with farming operations in her country. The lack of wildlife subjects in the local veterinary school curricula led Marcela to become active in conservation organizations where she volunteered in their offices and education programs while she was still a student. After finishing school, she volunteered as a field assistant for WCS biologists and field veterinarians who were establishing a wildlife health monitoring program in Patagonia. It was there that she received her first training from Wildlife Conservation Society field vets and learned how she might apply veterinary medicine to wildlife conservation. That summer changed her life. Now, Marcela is a WCS field vet herself. Since she started 15 years ago, she's worked tirelessly to address the critical shortage of training opportunities for young veterinarians in Latin America. Marcela spends much of her time in the field, providing veterinary expertise in wildlife handling and immobilizations, translocations, and health monitoring of wildlife populations. She has worked on sea lions, elephant seals, penguins, small carnivores, caiman, and raptors. Some of her recent work has focused on studying the impact of lead in Argentine wildlife, especially in ducks and other waterfowl. In the United States, the main regulation on the domestic use of lead ammunition is a 1991 Interior Department ban on the use of lead shot to hunt waterfowl in wetlands. This came about mostly because bald eagles that preyed on the waterfowl were being poisoned. 29 other countries have adopted voluntary or legislative restrictions, with some of the most aggressive regulations in Europe. In addition, there are some more localized bans. For instance, California has banned the use of lead ammunition in the range of the endangered California condor, and Arizona has a voluntary ban. Recently, there has been pressure in the United States to ban all lead-based ammunition, not just that for waterfowl. Early in 2010, the National Park Service announced a plan to ban lead ammunition and fishing tackle in the parks. In early August 2010, the Center for Biological Diversity, the American Bird Conservancy, and three other groups petitioned the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, for a ban on lead bullets, shot, and fishing sinkers under the Toxic Substances Control Act. However, in late August 2010, the EPA rejected the petition, saying it didn't have the legal authority to regulate this type of product. Argentina has no such ban on lead ammunition, and Marcela Uhart is working with communities and the government to eliminate lead from hunting munitions. When I spoke to her recently, I started by asking Marcela, what is the problem with lead?
Lead is a fascinating mineral, but I mean, it would have been much better if we had left it where it belonged in nature. Lead was, has always been around, but humans have only started using it for many, many things since the Industrial Revolution in the 1800s. And since then, it's been used for all sorts of things. And, some people, depending on, the age of the audience, might remember, lead in fuel, lead in paint, and lead in so many, even in children's toys, right? So it was also used for hunting ammunition, and it is still widely used all over the world, unfortunately. The problem with lead is that, especially when it is used for ammunition, that all the spent ammunition that remains in the environment actually degrades in a part of the environment. So it dissolves in the water, it dissolves into the soil, it is picked up by many of the plants that grow in any given location, and it can also be ingested by animals.
What species are most affected?
One of the species that are affected are birds, because they have this habit of picking up grit, what we call grit, which is little pieces of something hard, little stones that they put into their stomachs because they have no teeth. They have to swallow prey whole or seeds and other things. So they put these little stones in their stomachs, and with that they grind the food. So lead ammunition is normally picked up by many species and then put in their stomachs, and then it dissolves in their stomachs and can affect the duck's health. So in the case of ducks, they can become exposed by ingesting the lead, and they can also, of course, become exposed to lead toxicity from just any spent shot or any shot that remains within their muscles but doesn't kill them, because that is also absorbed slowly by the body.
What happens when lead enters the body?
When lead enters the body, it dissolves in the stomach with the acids, and then it goes, some of the salts of that lead go to different organs. So they go to the liver, they go to the kidneys, and whatever the body can't clear usually goes to the bones, and it replaces calcium and stays in the bones and the bone structure. So over time, what you get is animals with debilitated bone structure and that have more lead than calcium, for example. And as this process is happening, what occurs is the lead enters the bloodstream of the animals, and it seriously affects the organs such as the liver and the kidneys as well. But it also creates what is called neurological toxicity. So it goes to the brain, and it causes the animals to, in many cases, get very debilitated and oftentimes die as well.
And does the lead go further up the food chain?
So lead not only affects the species that ingest it directly, so it can also affect the species that then feed toxic ducks, let's call them that way.
Can you give me an example?
Poisoning of raptors has been described all over the world. It's a huge issue in the U.S. still.
What have you seen locally?
Locally, what we've seen is that some of the predators of the ducks can become poisoned as well. And we've done a study on yellow anacondas, which is a very large South American snake that feeds on large birds, including ducks. And we've found very, very high levels of lead in many of these snakes as well. So we know it goes up the food chain into predators. We haven't yet looked at other kinds of predators, such as raptors. But definitely birds of prey are one of the most affected groups in the world. And as a matter of fact, in the U.S., birds of prey still have significant conservation problems due to ingested lead from toxic prey. Even the emblematic efforts to bring back the California condor have, you know, run into problems constantly just because they tend to feed on deer or other prey that were killed with lead ammunition.
Tell me more about the problem with that.
The problem with that is, of course you get, you know, all of this secondary toxicity and all of these other species that are then affected, get sick and can die. But also that another predator species for ducks and many other game species is are humans. So by this mechanism, you can also see effects in the humans who feed on animals that are hunted with lead ammunition.
Is this a problem all over the world?
In many parts of the world, lead ammunition from shotguns, which is the tiny little pellets that are used for waterfowl hunting for the most part, has been replaced by alternatives that are not toxic. Many of those have steel and other components. Rifle ammunition, for example, has not been replaced in very many countries. As a matter of fact, it is still legal to use lead rifle ammunition in the U.S. and Canada, whereas the use of lead shot for waterfowl hunting has been prohibited now for many years. Well, not many, a few years.
In the United States, lead shot to hunt waterfowl in wetlands has been banned since 1991. This regulation came about mostly because bald eagles that preyed on the waterfowl were being poisoned. Currently, 29 other countries have adopted voluntary or legislative restrictions, with some of the most aggressive regulations having been adopted in Europe. Marcella, in your opinion, what country has taken the lead in banning lead in ammunition?
In a country in the world in terms of banning lead, it has been Denmark, but they haven't used lead in their ammunition for over 25 years. But the rest of the world is really slow in following their tracks.
So what's the advantage of lead? Why do hunters use it?
Yeah, I am not an expert, but I can say what I've learned through this process. And what I've heard from hunters, and a lot of this is from hunters in countries like Denmark, where lead hasn't been shipped for the last 25 years, is that a lot of the attributes of lead ammunition are really not critical for good sports hunting. So you can still kill effectively. You know, you don't want to leave injured animals around. And you can still be accurate, and you can still maintain all of the critical aspects of hunting, such as safety for people. So alternative ammunitions don't harm guns, and there are no issues with I forget the exact name, but there's something that where these little fragments of ammunition can break when they hit something, and you know they might affect, they could impact people who are actually hunting. So all of those issues have been really, which are what people look for in lead ammunition, are really now available in alternative ammunitions that are not toxic. And however, it has been hard for most people working for the banning of lead to convey this message to hunters. So what most of us have done is go to hunters themselves who have used alternative ammunition and have the expertise, and have them talk to hunters and try and convey this message in what we call hunter language, just so that these myths are burned. Because basically what happens now is that the qualities of lead are completely replaceable with other elements, and it's just something that is within tradition, and that's the way people learned it, and it's just a behavioral thing where people just must change. There's no real reason for still using lead, really. Ballistics are great with all the alternatives, and you can do the same without lead anymore.
Is there a difference in cost or in the manufacturing process? Would companies need to retool?
Yes. Those are really good questions. Yeah. There is a difference in cost. Anything that is not lead is much more expensive. However, the companies that are manufacturing steel shot, for example, which is one of the most used alternatives, have been able to do it at reasonable costs. So really, in some cases, the price is very similar to lead ammunition. But definitely any manufacturer that would, you know, have to switch over to non-toxic alternatives needs to, go through major changes in their factories or, you know, wherever, and to be able to do that. And I've sat through, lectures of manufacturers, and, you know, they can tell you about all the tests they made and all the different alternatives that are out there and how some are more cost-effective than others. But I think definitely steel shot nowadays is one of the most reasonable alternatives, and that is kind of fairly easy to transition into from a manufacturer's point of view, and that can still be made at a significant, pretty low cost, I would say.
Is there any downside to steel shot?
Aside from cost?
Not that we know of right now. You know, it's with these things, you know, when some of these things, these transitions occur, you know, and some of this, you know, alternative, you know, pretty soon we start thinking, well, you know, who knows, maybe in a few years, toxicity from steel. But, you know, far as we can tell now from the studies that have been conducted using steel it doesn't seem like there are major issues in terms of the environment or, you know, species being affected or the health of any sorts.
I wanted to get back to the idea of the effect on the duck or the waterfowl and talk about how you go about finding the impact. Are you doing necropsies on ducks to look at bone density or sampling livers and kidneys and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating how we got into this subject, because we were actually sampling ducks from hunter-killed ducks, actually, from hunting lodges, and we were trying to monitor avian influenza. So a few years ago, H5N1 avian influenza was a major issue of concern. So we began sampling ducks from hunters, and as we were doing the necropsies to collect those samples, we started seeing, you know, a lot of lead pellets in the stomachs of the birds, and started to wonder, you know, how this might be affecting the birds' health, given that in other parts of the world it had been described as a huge issue. So we have done this where we have continued to collect hunter-killed ducks, and what we do is a post-mortem examination, and we look for the digestive tract of the birds. So we find the stomach, and then we try and find the pellets inside them. And for that, what we do is we x-ray them first. Lead shines up really well on x-rays. And once we've seen the pellets in the x-rays, then we dissect the stomachs and try to recover each of those pellets. And in some cases, we find those pellets in the muscle of the stomach wall. And those we do not consider for our studies, because those might have come from the shot itself, and not so they were probably not ingested by the duck. So with the pellets that we find in the stomachs, we know how many of the ducks are currently being exposed to the lead. But we also look at lead, which is already which has already been absorbed by the ducks.
How do you find that?
We can find that in their blood, and we can find that also in their bones. Usually, the lead in the blood has come from very recent exposure. So we know that duck has been very recently exposed to lead. Whereas the lead that we find in the bones usually comes, I mean, it kind of accumulates over the lifespan of the ducks. So that is a good indicator of, you know, how many years or how long this duck has been exposed to lead and how slowly it's accumulating there.
When you say the lead in the blood is coming from recent exposure, are you talking weeks, months, days?
We're talking days. Okay. The lead in the blood is indication, usually it's only a few days. So it's however long it takes the acids in the stomach to dissolve the lead, and then that lead starts coming into the blood. Whereas what's in the bones, usually it's months or years. And you can also find lead in the feathers of the birds. We tried to look at museum specimens to see, you know, try and see if the problem had been around for a decade or 2 decades or maybe 100 years, but it was very difficult. But it still is a really good alternative, but you have to know exactly when the birds are molting and, you know, many other complicated issues. But the bones are fairly good indicators of accumulation over time. But there's no way really that we can know if that is, you know, from 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years or more. We can just say there's so much, you know, lead in the bones of the birds.
Can you tell how old the shot is in the stomach when you find it?
Yeah, actually, what we're trying to do now, I mean, definitely the shot, first of all, gets, it changes shape when it is shot by the gun, and as it enters the body. But also it starts to change its shape and lose content just from being in the environment. And then also, again, when it's in the stomach of the duck. So what we're trying to do now is a study where we're getting new lead pellets, and we're putting those in solutions with different concentrations of acid. So we're trying to imitate the pH of the body, of the stomachs of the ducks, and try to see how long the process of dissolving a pellet takes, and how, you know, how much lead they lose over what time. And then also we're trying to subject it to other kinds of pH, which are more normal in the environment, you know, say in the water, where the waterfowl live, in the lakes. And our hopes is that once we finish these studies, we can also take some sort of photographs of these pellets that have been artificially digested, very specific acid concentrations, and then use stick software to capture the exact shapes of those digested pellets so that we can later match it with the pellets that we find in the stomachs of the birds and try to come up with a standard for, you know, how long it has been exposed to what kind of acids, either in the environment or within the stomachs of the dogs. We'll see how that goes. We're still in the middle of that study. But it definitely would make the process simpler, and you know, it would actually give you an idea of, you know, the time exposure, which is what you were asking about.
Going back to the idea of the shot affecting the bone density, what is the impact of that? And also, how do you measure bone density in ducks?
Yeah, that is another study we had just begun, and we don't really know yet. But because lead replaces the calcium in the bones, we suspect there might be issues in terms of the density of those bones being affected over time. And actually, we can see some sort of difference in the bones when we take x-rays of the bones of the ducks that have been exposed to lead. Trying is used to make it studies in women mostly for osteoporosis, for example, which are called densitometry. And so we're trying to apply that technology to the bones of the ducks to see if we can find a pattern in terms of, you know, so much lead content in the bone and so much density that is lost in that bone as well. And then with that information, we could try and evaluate what the effects on the bones of those birds might be.
Have you noticed more broken bones in ducks, or what is the impact on the duck of this replacement?
Yeah, well, the main issue with the lead studies right now is that we have been doing it, I would say, it's a very challenging situation because we have been doing it what we would call the easy way. So we have been mostly on ducks that have been recently killed by hunters. So the problem with that is that our observations are very, very biased because the birds that we are sampling have been healthy enough to fly and be shot by a hunter. The problem is that there are probably a huge number of birds, ducks, that are poisoned and therefore unable to fly. And we are not currently sampling those because those are just not available to us. So, and actually some estimates from the Fish and Wildlife Service in the U.S. about 10 years ago when some people were trying to ban lead was that a similar proportion to the number of ducks that were dying, killed by hunters, were dying from lead exposure. So you could be talking about, you know, if you're taking, let's say, you know, 300 ducks from the population by hunters, you would be losing another 300 to lead exposure, to lead toxicity. So the impacts could be great.
Have you measured it?
We still haven't measured that. And we're actually ready to begin a study in a few months where we will try to look at what we call sublethal effects, those effects that are not killing the ducks per se, but that could severely affect their performance, both in terms of their normal behavior, their feeding behavior, or even their reproductive behavior, which could threaten the conservation of the species over the long term, especially for species that are so heavily hunted as some of these duck species. So we'll try and look at the bones of these birds that we capture in traps, not killed. And we'll try to look at the lead in their blood and also look at other indicators of lead toxicity, which are some enzymes that are affected by live when it is in the body. So with that, we hope to be able to test the hypothesis that even though some of the birds are not dying, that, you know, they're still severely affected by lead.
How will you be able to find ducks that are affected by the toxins when they're not hunter-killed ducks?
The final thing that happens with any wildlife mortality, really, but in the case of toxics also, is that dead wildlife are really hard to come across in the wild. You go out to nature anywhere and you would assume that a lot of species die every single day, or, you know, individuals die every single day. But nature is very efficient in collecting those carcasses and, you know, recycling them somewhere, some way. So, you know, most, you know, you put out carcasses out there and, you know, within a few hours, even, and if you try and go to that same location, you might not find anything because scavengers got at it, or, you know, somebody ate it, or somebody took it someplace, or it just, even if the bird is poisoned but not and not feeling well, what happens oftentimes is that they hide. So they go and find cover, and then they might die there, and it's just, they're just not easy to find in a huge wetland.
Then what does that imply in terms of the impact of the toxins on wildlife?
So for the most part, we think that the real impacts of the toxicity are way, way, way underestimated, because we can't even see, you know, what those numbers are.
Is there a way to address that, or is there a statistical way to try and get at the true impact of the lead toxicity?
Yes and no. I mean, there are studies that have been done specifically. I worked for years on some toxicity issues with pesticides and other species. One of them was the Swainson's hawks, which were poisoned in Argentina by misuse of a pesticide, agricultural pesticide. And we did many trials, and there are many published trials out there where you go out and place carcasses in a location, and you map that so you know where they are, and then you send out a bunch of people to try and find them. And it is amazing, because the most part, what you get in return is about 20 or 30% of what the real numbers were out there. So the underestimation is very significant. And, you know, we can refer to those kinds of studies for this. You know, it isn't really that precise, I would say. So anything will always be an estimate.
So what is the policy on lead in ammunition? Is there an effort to ban it in Argentina?
Well, I don't know if we should be proud of this, but we definitely stirred the wasp nest here. We, as I said, you know, we began looking into this kind of by accident as we were studying avian influenza, bird flu. But we definitely immediately contacted the Hunters Association and found out that the only ammunition that was used in all of Argentina for all sports hunting is lead. So that was pretty shocking. And we then began to work with the government of one of the states where we're working, which is called Santa Fe. And they have been very supportive, but it is a battle, again, changing policy, changing the behaviors of people, educating hunters, and just getting across the message that this is a problem has been a task that we've been undertaking for the last 3 years now. At this point, we have reached, I think, a very interesting moment where the government has recently called for a referendum where they have asked for technical advice from all of the sectors of society to begin the process of changing policy to replace lead ammunition in that state. And we're hoping that will happen over the next 2 or 3 years. It will be a slow process and a transition, and it's okay, because earlier manufacturers have to adapt, alternatives have to be available so that a change can occur. But we, you know, beyond the attitudes of hunters, we're also actually hoping that many other things will change, you know, that some people will switch to bird watching instead of hunting, as a business or a way of living or an interest, and other things like that. The fact that hunting lodges offer dead ducks to the poorest people living in rural areas. And those are the people that are being exposed to lead by eating those ducks. It's all something that has to be concerned, but it's very complicated because public health issues are usually seen as, you know, rightly so, more complicated than wildlife health issues. So I think it's an interesting process. It'll take some time before this happens, but I think we're on the right track. We have not taken any steps without having, you know, as much scientific evidence for our claims ever. And we're actually giving all that information now to the state and to all the stakeholders involved in making these policy changes so that they can make them, you know, based on real facts.
Recently, there's been new research by the Centers for Disease Control in the United States that found that those who ate wild game had 50% more lead in their blood than those who did not eat it.
Has there been any studies on the impact on humans from eating these ducks?
Not in Argentina. We are. I work for a conservation organization that works with wildlife, so that is out of my scope. But what we're trying to do is partner with human doctors, with MDs that might be interested in exploring the public health side of this, and we're expecting to have a few studies underway over the next year or so. Definitely in other parts of the world, this has been very, very well documented. So there's enough evidence to, you know, there's some things that don't really need, you know, you repeating all the experiments just to know that things are for sure. Sometimes, you know, applying the precautionary principle seems like the reasonable way to go. And what we're trying to convey right now to the government is that there's enough evidence of the impacts on the animals that we could assume that similar things could be happening to people in this location, even if the level of exposure is lower. But we have tested, for example, water and soil for lead, and we have also tested rice crops, and we have found lead in the rice, and we're trying to test vegetation now where cattle have, and if we find lead there, then, you know, it could be going to the cattle and then to people. So there are many, many ways in which people could be affected right now. And beyond there being hard studies, we believe that the time for change has come. There's so much evidence from around the world that it is kind of an overkill to look for this, and it would take a really long time before you got hard evidence for public health.
So I was about to ask you about the plants and vegetation absorbing the lead, and have you seen that, or you said you're testing it now?
Yeah, I mean we have seen lead being absorbed by rice plants. We have seen in the roots and in the stems, and in the we're now testing the rice grains themselves, which is what people would use for food. But there are studies in China that have showed lead residues in rice. So that's why we undertook this study. And even if they're tiny amounts, the problem is that lead accumulates in your body over time. And even really tiny amounts, when you're talking of, you know, undernourished children, could really affect the development of their nervous system and lead to all kind of disorders, you know, learning disorders and many other effects that are related to lead toxicity. So even if the amount of lead that is being absorbed through these other indirect ways is low, you would still want to get to a point where it's zero lead exposure, ideally.
How have hunters received the idea of switching to alternatives? Has there been a lot of opposition, or has there been a lot of support?
It has been mixed. Initially, the Hunters Association actually supported some of our studies. And then as the evidence, you know, we had more evidence to prove that this was an issue, you know, some groups within the Hunters Association was not so happy. We're not so happy with what we were finding. But, you know, for the most part, if you talk to the hunters, there are, of course, some that do not believe this is a problem because they've done it all their life or it's tradition and nobody, you know, they haven't seen the effects. But for the most part, people understand that this is a problem. They know lead is toxic, but the problem is just getting through the change. You know, those that are hunting guides fear that they might lose business or customers, and others are worried about the transition and the higher costs. Others are still concerned about what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, the ballistics and, you know, is real, are there real alternatives for lead out there, and, you know, what how good are they, and things like that.
What have you done to address those issues?
We've tried to you know, talk to them, and we've held many meetings with them, and we've always tried to address their concerns the best we can, and we're actually have been trying to fundraise for what we call a shooting clinic, in which we would bring, you know, hunters from countries where lead is not available, and just give demonstrations on the use of, you know, do blind shooting with, you know, alternative ammunition and lead ammunition, just so, and people wouldn't know what they're using, and then seeing, just, you know, just to try and burn myths and demonstrate that in reality alternative ammunition are just as good, and hopefully, you know, get people to change their minds. But in reality, I mean, it is a really slow process. Changing people's behaviors is never easy, and this will take some time. But for the most part, I think people do recognize that lead is toxic and that it is an issue for human health.
What about the wildlife?
I don't think people are very concerned about the wildlife, though. for the most part, ducks are like way on the bottom of their list. You know, they're agricultural pests, and that's why so it is a harder message to convey. But get to the public health issues, then people tend to respond better.
So what's your strategy?
We are actually hoping that once this first state where we have been working, Santa Fe, bans lead ammunition, that some of the neighboring states where hunting also occurs will slowly follow that path. And then that, you know, it's time to move on into something that makes sense for human health.
Now, in the U.S., the law is that lead shot is banned for waterfowl hunting, but it's not banned for rifles or outside of that.
However, recently there's been pressure in the United States to ban all lead-based ammunition. In fact, early in 2010, the National Park Service announced a plan to ban lead ammunition and fishing tackle in the parks. Then in early August 2010, the Center for Biological Diversity, the American Bird Conservancy, and three other groups petitioned the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a ban on lead bullets, shot, and fishing sinkers under the Toxic Substances Control Act. However, more recently, in late August 2010, EPA rejected the petition, saying it didn't have the legal authority to regulate this type of product. And that decision was a big victory in the United States for the National Rifle Association, who had opposed the petition because it claimed that such a ban would limit hunting and impose gun control. So what do you think? Should the focus appropriately be broader?
It's a much broader issue. Especially the fact California condors and so many other big birds of prey in the U.S. are still continuously being poisoned by lead because they eat deer hunted with rifle lead shot. You know, that shouldn't be happening anymore, and it's still an issue. So locally, what we're trying to do is, well, it's kind of hard to decide on how to approach this, but we think that, you know, on a small scale with one state and one issue, which is mostly waterfowl in this case, that we can build a case and hopefully later on extrapolate that to other kinds of shot and ammunition and you know, work for that replacement. We have colleagues who are working on monitoring lead exposure in South America condors as well and other birds of prey, and we hope that slowly we'll be able to, you know, build more evidence to show that those species are being affected as well. However, I must say that Argentina is well known mostly for the waterfowl hunting and a little bit less, significantly less actually, for big game hunting. So waterfowl hunting is done in about 9 states of the country, and the numbers of birds that are killed every year are just huge, and the number of wetlands being poisoned by lead shot are just humongous. So if we can give that a go first, and then, you know, we'll see how things go later. But for the most part, all over the world, the replacement of lead shot in wetlands has been the first change to occur. And then the replacement of other kinds of ammunition has been really, really slow or haven't happened, as in the U.S. and Canada, for example.
If people are interested in this issue, whether in the United States or Canada or Argentina or elsewhere, what would you recommend that someone do?
Well, if you are a hunter, above all, you should not hunt with lead ammunition of any sort. I mean, there are alternatives available in the market, and you should go for those. They might cost you more, but you know that you will be doing your health and the ecosystem's health no harm by using those alternatives. Also, the way that the system works in the U.S., you can probably write your state representatives or your congressman and try to raise the profile of this problem and try to have this taken addressed. Actually, there was a big motion this year from Congress to the EPA for the complete banning of lead in the U.S., and it was rejected. So I think anything that would build support for that again and try to reverse the outcome of last year, 2010 events would be very good to do as well. And finally, there are a number of organizations. One that comes to mind, for example, is the Peregrine Fund has been very involved in the toxic effects of lead for birds of prey mostly, but they're very active in gaining a lead shot. And there, you know, a number of other organizations, any conservation organization would be very interested in support to address these issues.
Well, I really appreciate the time that you spent talking with me.
Sure, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with the Wildlife Conservation Society's Marcelo Uhart about the impact of lead in Argentine wildlife and waterfowl. Edited transcripts of selected programs are available on my website, laurelnemi.com, and also on mongabay.com. That's mongabay.com. You can also find archived episodes of The Wildlife on iTunes, at my website, laurelnemi.com, and at laurelnemi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Wildlife can also be heard on the AnimalWise radio network, which is available nationally and internationally and is broadcast to any mobile internet device via Live 365, a 24/7 radio network. Of course, if you have any comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnemi.com. The Wildlife is generously underwritten by the Lake Champlain Land Trust, a nonprofit organization permanently conserving the lands, lakeshore, critical wildlife habitats, and natural areas of Lake Champlain. More information is available online at lclt.org. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP in Burlington, Vermont.